Hello, and welcome back to Season 2 of the Atlanta Opera's Blink Opera Podcast. I'm baritone John Moore, and I'm thrilled to return to the Atlanta Opera as Steve Jobs in the Revolution of Steve Jobs. My introduction to the Revolution of Steve Jobs was interesting. A friend of mine in New York handed me a score for this new opera. I looked at the opening scene, which is a big scene for Steve, and then the aria for Steve in scene 10. After looking at the music and sort of thinking about how it was set, and then reading the text, I thought, this thing is crazy. I can only say that my opinion about the opera first was changed drastically as I dove deep into the character of Steve Jobs and got to hear the Grammy Award-winning album created by some of my best friends. The opera has not only changed my perception of new opera in our time, but it has had a profound impact on my personal life. Steve Jobs is regarded as one of the great leaders in history. And what Steve Jobs set in motion with the iPhone, with Apple Corporation, Pixar, and all of the ways in which Steve Jobs has impacted everyone's life is really the perfect fodder for an opera. Mason Bates is not only a gifted classical music composer, but he's a curious composer. He's a composer of our time. And he grew up in an era where electronic sound was not in its infancy, but was developed and accessible in a way that allowed him to offer us a musical landscape and a soundscape that really sets in motion the opportunity for opera to consume the technological experience in a meaningful way. We must always keep in mind that what makes opera beautiful and takes what's available as art and melds it into the operatic experience. Sound design, electronic music, at this point, they're art forms. Mark Campbell is the leading librettist of our time, especially in America. At the core of every one of Mark Campbell's libretti is how unique individuals are in relationship to one another and with the world around them. And I believe he is a leader in his field in elevating the human story. And it's just a great honor to be a part of the creative process of Mason Bates and Mark Campbell. Now I would like to take you on a non-linear journey, bring you into sort of the condensed version of the 96-minute opera. We begin in a prologue. It's the garage of Steve Jobs' adoptive parents in Los Altos. We see young Steve and his father teaching him the values of craftsmanship. He gifts him a workman's table, and young Steve is excited. It's his birthday. What a great gift. From there, enter into a beautiful moment, the one we all remember, the launch of the first iPhone and the excitement of that moment. Of course, it's focus on the one device that would come to unalterably change the landscape of technology and of all aspects of life.
All with one device, does it all, in one hand, all you see.
We stay after that moment in the present time and see Steve Jobs fall to the ground exhausted from all of the work that he's put into this device and into Apple Corporation. And he's rescued in that moment by Laureen Powell Jobs, his wife, who implores him to come home. Steve takes that and takes a walk, a meditative walk. We then are introduced to his spiritual advisor, Kobun Chino Akutagawa, who as his advisor really centered him on the simple. Following our introduction to Kobun, we sort of go back in time to a calligraphy class at Reed College in Oregon. Steve had dropped out of formal schooling, but he stuck around and would take classes as he sort of saw fit. And this calligraphy class is quite a short moment in the opera, but it's very important because the concept of the Enso. The circle comes up, and it really is a moment that Steve realizes that what Kobun was imploring him to realize in simplicity was true, and that he was motivated then from that point to really keep that in mind as he developed his concepts and his ideas around technology. From that calligraphy class, we stay in 1973. Here we're introduced to Steve Wozniak, the genius engineer. In this scene, it's clever because we're introduced to the first machine that Steve and Steve created, which was a tiny blue box that allowed them to make free phone calls and to sort of bypass AT&T's system. We move slightly forward in time from there to Steve Jobs and Chris Ann Brennan in an apple orchard. And this is where we're introduced to psychedelics as well. Psychedelics played a pivotal role in Steve Jobs' life at that time. We're not sure what his future usage of the psychedelics were, but we know that he believed that his experience, in this case of LSD, was pivotal in helping him realize new ideas and breaking the molds of what was sort of received. And of course, we get also the opportunity to understand that Steve and Chris Ann Brennan had affection for each other, had love for each other, and of course, created a child together. After our introduction to Chris Ann Brennan in the apple orchard and the psychedelics, we have a moment where Kobun once again appears and reminds Steve that he needs to keep things simple. And that moves Steve sort of out of that trip or journey and fast forwards us to 1989 to a lecture hall at Stanford University. Here we meet Laureen Powell Jobs, his future wife, for the first time. From there, we move into the middle of the opera, and once again, we're in the family garage of Steve Jobs in Los Altos. This is 1976. Steve and Steve are in the garage smoking marijuana, and Steve Wozniak is putting some final touches on what looks like the Apple I computer. In the middle of the scene, Chris Ann Brennan comes in and lets Steve Jobs know that she's had a test and that she's pregnant. Steve is shocked. And this is the moment when we get to see the distortion field that Steve Jobs sort of lived in, where he denies that he wants the child. He literally says to her, "I don't want it. I'll say it's not mine." And Chris Ann, of course, is devastated. She leaves the scene, and Steve Wozniak reappears and sort of sheepishly asks Steve if he's okay, having overheard this exchange. And Steve brushes it off quickly, hones in on the Apple I sitting on the desk, and says, "We've got to cover it up. We have to cover it up completely. No wires, no clutter. It's messy." Then he goes straight back into Steve Jobs and the Apple device and sings this extraordinary aria. Machines can be the same way. something we play.
Something that doesn't play us, but something we play.
This develops into what we then experience as Steve Jobs' most horrendous period, where he was just very vitriolic to his employees, to his closest confidants. And we see this in scenes that are about product development. And we get an incredible moment in the middle of this great scene at the office space where Steve Wozniak comes in and just says, "Don't you remember what it was like when we weren't caught up in the great drama of all of the business and the stock numbers and, you know, the products? We were just doing it to have fun and to create new things." At the end of that scene, Steve finds himself in the boardroom being fired by his own company. And that is the moment we see Steve sort of released into, back into the meditative mindset. Not only that, but he realizes that he made mistakes, and we start to come back into sort of the present moment, realizing his mortality for the first time in a meaningful way. And all the while, it's Laureen Powell Jobs that's there for him. There's a wonderful scene of them still pre-marriage. We're sort of going back and forth in the story, reliving in a circular fashion Steve Jobs' progression as a man and as a leader. And it's Laureen Powell Jobs, of course, that really anchors him to what's true and what's wholesome in life. There's a beautiful intimate scene with Steve and Laureen at Steve's house, a rather minimalist affair. It's Laureen that calls to attention Steve's lack of honest appraisal of what's important, and that he should love what he's doing. He should think of it like an Ella Fitzgerald song. And that reinvigorates Steve. And then we get this sort of end of the opera is many moments, a beautiful aria of Laureen's where she's talking about how the human is not a machine. It's not something that you can just plug in a new box or plug in a new wire and fix. After that, then we have the wedding scene, including Coburn, of course, Laureen Powell Jobs. And at this point, Steve is at the end of his life. We are chronologically sort of jumping back and forth. But when we get to the end of the opera with a beautiful memorial scene that Steve finds himself in, he sort of has a moment to acknowledge and to revere the relationships with the core group around him and what that has meant for him as a man. And we come back to the one device. It's important that we use them and that we use them well, but we should take time. The Revolution of Steve Jobs is a great operatic story that I know you'll enjoy. I'm baritone John Moore. Thank you for tuning in.